folks, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of the I'm All Over the Place podcast. My name is Dara Starr Tucker, and we are in the midst of Dads and Daughters Month here on I'm All Over the Place. I hope you had the chance to listen to the Holly Robinson Pete episode of the podcast. We had the chance to get into some really interesting dynamics around fathers and daughters and just her life within the industry and her career and all sorts of things. That was a really, really cool interview. And I hope you had the chance to check that one out. This episode features the one and only, the incredible Miss Layla Hathaway. And as you probably know, she is the daughter of the legendary Mr. Donny Hathaway, the late Mr. Donny Hathaway. And I had the chance to sit down and talk with Layla at a wonderful facility here in Philadelphia called Rec Philly. They were gracious enough to open up their facilities to us to do this interview. If you would like to see the video version of this, you can watch it on YouTube. But they opened up their facilities to us and just made everyone feel super comfortable. I want to send a special shout out to Scarlett there at Rec Philly for making accommodations for us. But it's a wonderful artist space where visual artists and creative people, musicians, can pay a monthly membership fee and rent out space to be able to track albums, to be able to do whatever creative things that they're into. So they made some room for us to sit down and talk to Layla Hathaway, and I'm so pleased with how everything turned out. So if you want to see the video version, head on over to my channel, Dara Starr Tucker, on YouTube. Be sure to stay tuned after the interview portion of this podcast is over. Greg Bryant and I, who is my frequent co-host on this podcast, are going to sit down and have a conversation about the behind the scenes of setting up this interview, just kind of the logistics of what we went through, just reflecting on that process and what that was like for us and what a thrill it was for us to be able to sit down with Layla. But I want to get to the interview now. Layla's going to talk about her dad, Donny Hathaway, and just her reflections on him and his significance in all of our lives and who he was to her as a dad. This was a really, really cool conversation for me to be able to have. And just thanks again to Layla and to her team for making her available for this interview. But without further ado, I present to you my interview with Layla Hathaway. Well, welcome to I'm All Over the Place with Dara Starr Tucker. I am so happy, so very happy. You have no idea how happy I am to introduce my very special guest today, Miss Layla Hathaway.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here, Layla.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking time in your busy touring schedule to do this, because I know the rigors of being on the road, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And yeah, how is the tour going so far?
Going well. It's a little shorty, but it's a very intense little shorty. Mm-hmm. So we're up very, you know, some call it early morning. We think of it as late night for flights and flying into a city and then sometimes two shows, so...
Yeah.
We're glad to be out, though.
Yeah. I hear a lot of people say they don't necessarily pay you for doing the shows. They pay you for the travel and being on the road.
That's a good way to look at it. The inconvenience is really, that's the sticky stuff. The show takes up for everything, but yes, the rest is not always fun.
Yeah. How do you get into just the space of enjoyment being on the stage? Because it can be very easy when you have show after show after show to get into this sort of rote thing of just like, this is the song I do here and there, and this is how the audience is going to react.
We change it up a lot. You know, sometimes we'll call an audible in the middle of a show.
Okay.
It's easy sometimes to read a room and see what people may want. Sometimes we may honor a request.
Yeah.
You know, we just try to keep it kind of moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard one of my favorite singers, Mel Torme, say, people asked him, like, do you get sick of singing? I don't remember what it was, one of his signature songs. And he said, it feels different to me every night. It does not feel the same. Do you, what is that space like for you of like a song that you've done, you know, something or whatever, a song like
times.
that you've done a million times?
You know, in the front of picking out a record to record, that does cross my mind. Like, will I be able to sing this for the next 30 years and not feel jaded and not feel like I'm just saying the same stuff over and over again? Right. So I try to pick really good songs that I like. And when you're up there, a lot of times people don't recognize that they are a part of the performance and the experience.
Mm.
So how I'm relating to people in that audience makes everything different every time, even if it's the same song.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And of course, with you being as highly like improvisational as you are, you're going to find some different territory in it every night, which is probably what makes it maybe a little easier going for you than someone who's not.
It's fun. I mean, I find myself sometimes stuck in a way in a place of improvising in a certain way, and then I'll break out of that for a moment. So I think it's all evolution. You're always on that path toward getting it however you want to get it, but it definitely changes. It may stay the same for a minute, and then it'll break out, and then everyone on the stage is like, oh, okay, something happened there where there was a departure.
Does that space feel different for you now than it did? I mean, of course it does, than it did 20 years ago. But how are you finding yourself in that sort of spontaneous or improvisational place, you know, now versus when earlier in your career when you first started out?
That's my favorite part. My favorite part is really being able to interpret the stories and interpret the melodies, but then finding out how I can interpret them differently. I want to keep the audience on their toes, but I also want to keep the band on their toes too. So we're just constantly, you know, having this conversation, and it's about the same bunch of subjects, but how can we bring new information into the conversation with each other?
Yeah. So this particular talk is a part of a wider series that I'm doing for my podcast about fathers. For some reason, I've just been fixated on dads. I lost my dad several years ago, and so I've reached out to a few people. Bernie Mac's daughter, I've talked to her, and I've talked to Holly Robinson-Pete about her dad, and so yours will be the third. This is going to be an October thing. We're talking about dads, and so kind of getting into that space of just considering fathers, and of course, your father is one of the most legendary musicians, singers, songwriters, is in my opinion, that the world has ever known. And I'm sure that you have folks who are, you know, constantly just fawning over him and want to tell you all about his influence on them. But he was your dad, you know, above all. I follow Bernice King, who's Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter, and I follow her on all platforms. And it's so interesting to just sit and listen to her speak about that man who's so iconic to us as a father. And she calls him daddy, and it really, it just humanizes him for me, which I love. I just love to listen to people who have family members, parents in particular, who we feel we know and who have had an impression on us, but we will never sit in the space that you sit with him. So I kind of want to talk to you about your dad a little bit today. And just if you can talk to me just about what part of him musically you received. What did your dad give you? What did he teach you?
Yeah.
And then what part of him is just in you that was innate and you had absolutely no choice?
You know, what's interesting is, you know, and I love to hear Bernice speak as well. And I think she had the gift of really being around her dad to get to know him in that way. My father died when I was 10 years old. Yeah. And so when people ask stories about him, you know, some of those answers I don't have. What I have is such an intimate knowledge of my father that I can't even really impart to people.
Yeah.
It's there spiritually, it's there musically, and for me, that's everything. That's the way I communicate with the world. So much of what I do and how I learned how to do it and how I think about what I do, I know comes from my dad. So I'm the daughter of two musicians. Yes. My parents met at Howard, and we're both musicians. And so much of the way I communicate. And my mom will say, oh, that's just like your daddy, or you smell like your daddy, you know. So much of that comes from him, even though I didn't have the conscious memory to create that memory, you know.
Yeah. How vivid are those memories for you? Because, I mean, that's such a tender age a dad.
I think, you know, a lot of my memories in my 20s became like what people told me about my dad. You know what I mean? A lot of I would meet people and they'd say, oh, I played with your dad. He collected sunglasses, or he was really funny, or he was very sarcastic. Things that I could relate to in that way. So a lot of my memories became that. But I don't have a super vivid, speakable memory that has language about living with my dad. It's all very much, and I found this out in therapy, it's all very much in the nervous system of my body. Because he's there in the beginning of my life, and so that is what I learn, and it's always in me, and it's hard to communicate because it's not like a, well, one time we went to Friendly's and we had a fribble. They are not those types of memories, you know what I mean? But it's clear every time I open my mouth to sing that those memories are with me. They're just a whole part of the tapestry and fabric of who I am.
Yeah. Do you have actual memories of specific music memories of him?
Not really. Not really. I have a couple, but none really that I could say to you. I remember once that, you know, there were a lot of times I was a little kid at the piano, and he would call me Little Miss Muffet. So that became my nickname, sitting at the piano, and I started playing piano very young. But
stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's Joseph M. Wanted with the Christitutionalist Politics. Tune in for the upcoming episode for May 4. Issue, Never the Issue, as well as guests Peter Serafin, Rosemary Downer, Don Gallade, Gista the Rapper, Cy Young, Jason Perry, and upcoming Jack Hagar, Andrew Thorpe King, Trent Rock, Ed Temple, Chris Morehouse, and more. Please tune in to Christitutionalist Politics. God bless.
Not really.
Yeah. Do you feel any sort of, I don't even want to use the word pressure, do you feel any sort of responsibility, I guess, to carry, you know, the mantle, just that heavy, like, this is Donnie, I am Donnie's daughter, I need to represent him in this way. Do you feel that sense of responsibility
I
with
do.
His legacy?
I definitely do. You know, my father has two daughters. We both are musicians. We both, you know, rep our family name. I know that for me, as a singer and somebody, you know, folks always say, oh, you sound so much like your dad, and they feel like it's phenomenal. I feel like in a lot of ways, the box was made by those people, so that's what I sound
right.
like. You know what I mean? So, but it's important to me to strive to be great. And because I come from the greatest singer of all time, I don't even have to really, that's not a thing I have to fight or deal with every day. I think if I had been born a boy and my name was Donny Hathaway, because I'm named after my mother, if my name was Donny Hathaway and I was a boy and I was a singer, I think there would be a different type of pressure applied.
Yeah.
But to be able to just float in and onto the planet with this legacy and with this talent in my body, I don't have to think about that, the pressure of it.
Yeah, you've never struck me as someone who had something to prove. And I have watched your career. I can't say I've watched your career from the very beginning. I really kind of became aware of you in the YouTube era. I knew who you were, but I didn't know who you were until YouTube hit. And I know I want to ask you about a couple of things, because I know, you know, you kind of have a thing about shows and people pulling out cell phones and all this kind of stuff in shows. But conversely, I wouldn't really know what you had to offer if it weren't for people pulling out cell phones
and
shows.
It's such a love-hate.
Yeah.
It's a love-hate with the phone, because, like, the other night I was playing, and a lady, like, in the first row had a whole iPad. And I can't see her face. I can't connect with her. It's just this big, shiny thing. And I feel like people are so distracted at the show. I appreciate that you want to grab a clip and show it to your people, or throw it up on your YouTube or your Facebook or wherever you are, but then be present in the room.
Right.
It's so important to me to be able to, like, we have eye contact with people and to be able to connect with people, and they keep the flash on, and it's just like, you could have stayed at home and watched on YouTube, but you're in the front row where there's people in the back that wish they could really be up here and really be taking it in and seeing it.
Right.
So I don't mind for a minute, but then I ask them, put your phones away.
Yeah.
Because they stop looking at you on the stage, and then right at the stage, they will look at their phone looking at you, in which case it's already happened. So
yeah. I mean, that's a completely reasonable request.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, the idea of an iPad out at a concert. But
not even a mini, like the whole shebang, 12.9 shebang.
Boomer activities.
Yeah.
So really, zeroing back in on your dad, though, I feel like he was chronically, severely, just ridiculously underrated. I don't know about in his day, but I feel like in my day, he has been an underrated musician, criminally underrated. especially when you do the contrast and compare with someone like Stevie or even George Benson or, you know, names that are much more like household, you know, names. There's a lot of folks who still don't know who Donny Hathaway is. I think in the Black community, we know. Mm-hmm. Outside of the Black community, they may know this Christmas, you know, just recently in the last 15 years or so. But outside of that, or they may know the Maude theme or something.
Sure.
You know. But there are a lot of people who don't know who your dad is.
Yeah.
And conversely, there are a lot of people who don't know who you are.
Right.
Outside, maybe, you know, since the Snarky Puppy clip mm-hmm. happened with you singing chords and things like that. But in my opinion, you deserve to be a household name even before that.
Thank you.
And outside of that. So I feel like that's something that you all very much have in common. That sort of underground,
right?
Underrated like thing. Like what do you make of that?
I don't think we're underrated. I think we are both super highly rated.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are underseen,
mm-hmm.
Underexploited as the brand could go.
Right.
And I think in a lot of ways my dad is here so I can get here, and I'm in a lot of ways here so he can stay here.
Mm.
So I am working to fix all that. That has to do with the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just had this conversation the other day about understanding that the stuff is not who you are. It doesn't represent who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You are no less of a great musician than the next person because you don't have commercial hits or you mm-hmm. don't have commercial financial success in that strata that people would deem commercially successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in terms of being underrated, I have never, ever heard anyone rate Donny Hathaway as meh. I've never heard that.
Or you.
I've never gotten a meh.
Right.
So it's really about understanding the path
mm-hmm.
and understanding who you are and how it relates to what it is you do.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I want all the stuff.
Yeah.
I want all of the cars and homes and the jets and I'd like all of the stuff. But really, I recognize that my talent, which I do not own,
mm-hmm.
which is on loan to me while I'm here this time,
mm-hmm.
it puts me in like the top 100 singers of all time.
Mm.
I understand that.
Mm.
And whether or not I'm a household name or the people in Boise know who I am, that's still who I am.
Yeah.
You know?
That's such a beautiful thing that you can own that. It doesn't sound like arrogance, but it sounds like security. It sounds like confidence.
And it has nothing
like
really to do with me.
Yeah.
It's just what I got this time.
So how hard, I guess, this is a kind of a nebulous question. How hard did you have to work on what you have? I mean, because I know your mom, as you said, is an exceptional musician, and she worked with you. I remember seeing a kid named Dylan, and I'm trying to remember his last name. His dad is a YouTuber, and he would play these chords, just these complex chords, and his son would pick out every note in the chord. Rick Beato is the man, and his son was named Dylan Beato. And I remember you commenting on this and saying, this feels like what I grew up with. This feels like how I was trained.
Yeah.
So if that training had never happened, where would you see yourself? I mean, is that an innate thing, or is it like how hard have you had to work on it?
I think it's an innate thing, but it's also a question of nature and nurture. So I actually am blessed to have both. I was naturally a musician growing up, but I was also educated about my craft and about music. And I grew up in a time in the 70s and 80s when there was so much teachable music all the time and all around you. Like, that is how, you know, we the people in mm-hmm. order to form a more perfect union. That's how they used to teach us. We mm-hmm. had Sesame Street, and we had music in school, and that's how we learned. But I also have a natural bent for it anyway. So mm-hmm. I am nature and nurture in that.
Mm.
I do have to work, and I continue to work because I'm a student. I'm always going to be a student. I'm always trying to push it and see what I can do and mm-hmm. how I can sound and how I can sound better and how I can make my instrument do things. I'm really interested in sound.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is absolutely natural.
Yeah. You said you're a student. Are you a teacher?
Maybe. I'd never thought of myself as a teacher before. I did start doing clinics and talking to students and musicians, and I realized that I have things to teach, and I have been in situations that maybe they have not. So mm-hmm. maybe, yeah, I am a teacher.
Yeah.
I used to feel like if you really want to learn what it is I'm doing, just you listen to the records, because I am not a person that likes to talk about myself all the time.
Right.
The hope is that as an artist, you are inside of my head and you are listening to these songs and I am imparting who I am to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, your dad was one of his most, I guess, probably his most commercially successful albums were the duets albums with Roberta Flack. So if Layla Hathaway were to do a duets album with one person.
With only one person?
With only one person, who would that person be?
Living?
Of course, Layla.
In real life?
Of course. Of course.
I don't know. I don't know that I would only pick one person. That would be hard. I do a lot of collaborations, and yeah, so much of my career is so collaborative. You mean a singer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You don't know who that person would necessarily be for you?
I don't. I really don't. I mean, there are a lot of people I'd like to sing with.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I could definitive. I could.
There's, can you give me a top three or top,
five? Stevie Wonder, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Jasmine Sullivan, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Glasper. Oh, you said singers. I don't know. I don't necessarily imagine myself as a duet partner or a. There are a lot of interesting collaborations that could be had. It would be really hard to nail down like three singers.
The ones.
Yeah. And I've worked with so many of them already.
You know?
I've been really lucky.
Yeah. I mean, I would immediately purchase Layla Hathaway's Stevie Wonder album.
Me
too. I don't
care
if it was the frickin' ABCs.
Me too.
It would be purchased immediately. So a curious question that's just my own little curiosity. I have had arguments with people about your influences because I perceive certain things and I may be way off. So you can satisfy my curiosity here. Indulge me for a moment. I feel like you are naturally your father's daughter musically and in every way. But I feel like when I watch you do what you do, I see so much Luther in what you do. Is that an accurate assessment?
Way?
Everything.
On his song or in all the songs?
All your songs. Just your stance,
interesting,
the way you carry yourself, the choices that you make, the confidence. Just when I watch you, it feels like watching him.
Interesting.
Is he that big an influence? Or
I don't know. I think if you see it, you see the part of me that is informed by him. I know that growing up, I loved change. I loved Luther. I had a conversation with Marcus Miller in the early 1990s where we were talking about like some of our favorite singers, and he said his number one favorite singer was Luther Vandross.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? I didn't understand that because I was coming from a completely different school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has come to be like a huge influence on me in terms of his tone and commitment to craft, just
mm-hmm.
the whole craft of it. I don't know that I would say he's as big an influence on me as like Stevie Wonder or Prince or Foreigner or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's interesting that you get that. I think that we are cut from some of the same cloths in terms of crooners and the aesthetic of rhythm and blues from that era.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay.
But I like that.
All right. Well, I can't win that argument now going forward. It exists in my mind only. But tell me, Layla, what you have. What's happening now? I feel you have new music that's come out
music,
very
yeah.
recently. Please tell me what's going on.
I have a single out called "The Energy" that I wrote during the quarantine.
Okay.
And it was really based on a couple of things. The first thing was that I was stuck in the house and I couldn't get out, and I really wanted to be in Chicago and I really wanted to be hanging out with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing was it was really on the heels of, you know, leaving from 2016 to 2020, that whole period of time, that the anxiety of feeling pent up anyway, even before we got into the quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And just after George Floyd, there's a line in the song that says, "I can't breathe."
Hmm.
And a lot of it had to do with me just feeling pent up entirely and trying to figure out how to channel that energy. Mm-hmm. So these were some of the first songs that I wrote into the quarantine. I was working with a guy named Juan Ariza, mm-hmm. and we were doing a lot of stuff on Zoom, figuring out ways to record things into a voice memo and text. And this is before we've even met, you know, officially. Mm-hmm. Found him on TikTok, mm-hmm. and started stalking him and told him, I love what you're doing. I would love to work with you. And that took a few weeks. And he finally hit me back and said, is this you, actually? So we wrote that song. That's one of the first ones we wrote.
Wow. Very cool. And that's out now.
It's out now.
Is there more coming?
There's more coming. Hopefully top of the year. I haven't figured out. I'd had a lot of, that downtime was really good for me, even though I wanted to be outside. It was such a recharge. And I'm moving since 1990, my record came out. I have not really stopped working. Yeah. So that was a nice, quiet, no traffic, no lines at Costco time.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned TikTok. You are quite active. I mean, my perception is that you're
I'm
online.
Active. If by active you mean looking at TikTok an hour a day.
That's what I mean.
Yes, it's absolutely a platform. I think had I found it 4 years sooner, I think I would be more active, and I'm looking to become more active because I like it.
Yeah.
It is definitely the slot machine of social media. I appreciate all the little dopamine that I get in the morning looking at TikTok, and that's where I found you and so many creators and so many smart people and creative people. Yeah. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I you know, you talk about stalking people. I stalk you. You're one of the people where I'm just like, oh, Layla Hathaway put a like on that, and I notice the things every once in a while. If you comment on something, then I see your thing because, you know, it shows you the people that you follow more actively. But I've noticed, you know, you like the serious stuff and you pay attention to that stuff. But I also notice some Layla Hathaway likes on just some absolute foolishness, which makes me smile. I'm just like, wow.
That's why I enjoy that platform. I can learn something for 3 minutes and then I can laugh hysterically for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I appreciate the diversity of stuff that's up there.
Yeah. And I, you know, you also have, even before the George Floyd stuff happened and, you know, just the craziness of the election and all that stuff, which is really when I started speaking out. But you were always, you know, you were never the one to get up and do a, you know, a dissertation or anything like that. But you have never really held your tongue. You've always been somebody who's just like, this is how I feel about what's going on. This is BS.
Yeah.
You know, you've never been afraid to criticize politicians, people in power, just speak your mind, put up a meme that expresses how you feel. You've never really been one to feel like you had to kind of bifurcate yourself and be like, I'm an artist and this is what people expect of me.
Yeah.
Is that thing in you? Is more of that in you, like that social justice thing?
I think so. I think it's definitely in me. And I think the thing that annoys me is to go, like, you know, in a year like this year, you know, where so much stuff is coming up and we're about to vote soon, and it's not, no one's even talking about it, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's very important to me on tiny little soapbox that I have to be able to say, hey, here's something I'm thinking about. Is anybody else thinking about this?
Mm-hmm.
It's very important.
Yeah. And I think as artists, it's very important, in my opinion, it's important for artists to be able to speak out because I think it emboldens and it empowers other people.
Absolutely.
Who may think, oh, if I say anything, I'm going to lose my folks. I'm going to turn people off.
And I think a lot of people have that fear.
Yeah.
I do. I also think people are checked out in a way. It's interesting. In the last 5, 10, maybe even 15 years, a lot of people have checked in like, oh, you know, this is what I helped to do, or this is the change that I wanted to see affected.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also a lot of people in the last 5-10 years have really checked out, sadly.
And why do you think that is?
I think it's been a mental kind of succubus. I think people have compassion fatigue, kind of. They have political fatigue. They're just tired. And I think there's so much BS in the whole stratosphere that it's hard to know when you are, I think for average people to know when you're taking in real things and not real things, because there's so much BS.
Mm-hmm.
So even now I get these emails and I'll have to send them one to my accountant, like, is this an actual bill? Is this actually JP Morgan? It looks like it. But there's so much scam and there's so much non-truth in advertising.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with someone the other day actually about that very thing. He said, why are so many intelligent people willing to believe. And I think it was the alien thing, you know, when the guy was testifying in Congress. It's like, I'm talking to a lot of intelligent people who just, you know, they don't know what to believe at this point. And I think I made the exact point. It's just a fatigue of, like, having to use these critical thinking skills and parsing out the truth from the lies. I think that's absolutely
accurate. Think also I really do feel like we are in an era right now where, particularly with the social media platforms that we really rely on and go to, I feel like they're falling apart, particularly like Twitter. You know, there was an element of news that I got from looking at Twitter that I do not get now.
Right. No, absolutely. That's one of my big passions. It's just like, you know, let's media literacy and, like, let's find this bedrock. Let's understand what the truth is from, you know, all of the other stuff. And it's harder than it ever has been before, I think. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time, Leda. I'm actually going to circle back with my last question, and I'm going to ask you once again about your dad. One of the themes of the conversations that I have been having, and one of the things I like to talk about, is grief and how we get through that, particularly when it comes to loss of parents. I lost both my parents in the same year, which was an interesting experience, but it's nothing, I still say, nothing along the lines of losing your parents when you're young, when you're small. So how did your mom, who we see on your socials every once in a while, how did your mom help you and your sister? Your sister's name is Kenya, is that right? How did she help you all kind of get through that process? Because that was, you know, I mean, I can't imagine anything more jarring for a child.
I mean, she's our mom. She's not a grief counselor. I'll put it like that. I don't know that she had all the tools to deal with it. She was 33 years old, just like my father was 33 years old. So when I look back on that and I think about the fact that she was a baby, she was a little baby widow, I think that she did the best that she could with us to try to make things as normal as possible. It has taken me decades to get into therapy, and even just beginning in the last 10 years to really deal with grief. And it's one of those things, you know, it expands, it contracts, it moves left, it moves right. It's one of those things that you cannot really anticipate how you will move through it. It's just a process. It's an evolution. And I used to wonder as a kid, like, I wonder if it would be worse to lose a parent as a kid or as an adult. All these ways that you play with the fatalistic, kind of nihilistic sort of themes in your mind once you lose a parent. The one thing that losing a parent young did to me and for me was make me really pull back and look at things in a more macro way, I think. Understanding that, oh, okay, at some point this comes to an end. And I think I've been aware of that all my life.
You just, I will say, you seem like such a well-adjusted person.
I seem like it.
I don't know you deeply and personally, but there's so many children.
Don't ask anyone in this room.
There's so many children of celebrities and famous people, especially when there's tragedy involved, that are just not. And so your mom has just, I will give credit to your mom as best I can, just did an incredible job.
And she's an incredible woman. I think that the big thing is we never felt like we were a celebrity. It was just very normal for us to be musicians, and that was their jobs. And so I never felt like a child of a celebrity. I think maybe had I been born in 1990 or 2000, it would be completely different because everything you do is for a camera and for someone's gaze and approval. And I think we were able to just grow up in a way that felt quasi-normal, you know?
Do you have any plans, final question, to do any more kind of collabs with your dad? I know that you've done, like, wah-ha-ha.
I don't know what. I'm going to figure it out. I do have a legacy show, which is me with an orchestra singing my dad's material that we've done. We did in New York in 2017, I think, and then we took it to Europe. We've been to Europe a few times with it. Hoping to make a record out of that, and some other things. I don't know yet. I'm just starting to mess with it now. So my 20s, I thought, no, absolutely not. My 30s, I thought, hell no, not doing that. And as it's come up, I'm kind of, things evolve and things change, and what's for you will not go by you. So I try never to say never anymore, but we shall see.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you for having me. Here. I'm so honored.
I am beyond honored.
You cross my screen every day at some point where I'm laying in the bed like, there she go.
There she is, swipe, swipe. Thank you so much, Layla. This is a huge honor.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that you know, for those of us who are in music in any way, shape, or form, or even not, you are a tremendous, tremendous influence.
Thank you.
Just the essence, the you-ness of you. Is it's just unsurpassed.
Thank you.
And I'm just deeply, deeply honored that you would take time for me today. So thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm so glad you're right next door to the gig, too.
Glad that's why we chose this place.
Yes. So. Good. Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you.
All right. So that was the Layla Hathaway interview. I am thrilled beyond belief that she agreed to sit down and talk to me. Layla has followed me for a little while on social media, and I was absolutely blown away to see that she had plugged into my stuff, first of all. But to know that she would take time to actually, you know, from her tour schedule, which I understand very well, you know, can be rigorous. And she took time away from her schedule to sit down and talk to me. We just kind of wanted to run down the behind the scenes experience with you of that, because this was really our first kind of big, ambitious, like, let's go after someone who's really a name, who's really a celebrity, and let's just see if we can get them to agree to be on the show. And I was so glad she agreed to do it and kind of surprised, but kind of helps that she was familiar with me. So I had Greg, who's here. Say hi, Greg.
Hey there.
Who's my manager. I had him reach out to Layla's people.
I mean, kudos to you, Dara, for doing the work. Because the work has allowed a new portal to connect with people who are notable and those who are still yet on the rise. You know what I mean? A lot of people you've met doing this work in the past 2.5 years, roughly, that you have admired for a long time and now get to see in a pure sense who you are and what you stand for. So first of all, kudos to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I would have to say really quickly that the Layla Hathaway team is impeccable.
Yeah.
You know, kudos to Jermaine and Wade. The esthetician's name is escaping right now. I apologize, brother, if you're listening. But Layla is on it. Yeah. Her band was great, obviously.
Yeah, it's hashtag goals, because as you guys know, I'm a singer, and we do, you know, certainly not at the level that she's doing it. But we, you know, the logistics are important to us. We were super, like, plugged in, dialed in, paying attention to, like, who's she traveling with? What is their job? What's the process beforehand? Exactly what is the procedure? What are, you know, what are the requirements? And, you know, you got to be kind of on it if you're really trying to get someone of note to come and do your thing with you. And so it, you know, it was good for us to see that kind of behind the scenes of her operation.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, she doesn't travel with a huge entourage,
right?
But it's, you know, she's got security, she's got, you know, who she needs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's there. They take care. They take very good care of her.
As they should.
They really do.
She's a national treasure, as are you. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling the truth.
We're going to talk about Layla today.
That's
Layla,
fine.
Who is on my top.
That's,
I mean,
totally cool.
This is, y'all don't understand. Like, I stopped after the interview was over. I looked at her and I was like, you don't understand. I was really trying not to do the fawning thing, but I was like, you don't understand. This is like Michael Jackson level stuff for me.
It is.
Donnie, Layla, you know, it's Stevie, Whitney. I mean, this is like elite level, you know, territory here. This is, as your mother would say, Greg, this is talk hot.
That is. It is.
So, you know, even though she may not, you know, it may not be a Beyonce, but she's Beyonce to me.
Well, to me too.
Shoot.
I mean, I feel like she is the voice of this
She's
generation.
The voice of the generation.
And the situation is, yeah, we're a small operation.
Yeah.
You know, but we're
you can't see, if you're listening to the podcast and not watching it on YouTube, we're out here sitting on the steps. We're in, I don't even know what part of Philadelphia this is. Where are we?
Yeah, you got me on
it's
that.
It's not downtown. We're over by the river, kind of shooting some music stuff, and we thought we would stop and just give some reflections on this this interview. So this, we're literally just a two-person team. Everything that you see us do, it's either just me by myself.
Yep.
It may be Greg behind the scenes just pulling a few little cords.
It's mostly
if
you.
There's some logistics to work out. So we are a team between ourselves, but we do not have a team.
Yeah. I mean, the only way that we really get to stand out is by the quality of our work.
Yeah.
And, you know, the little small things go the extra way. You know, somebody says, you know, they want this type of treatment. what just small extra can you do to over deliver? Just small things.
Greg's really good. He's good at that. Just kind of, because Greg's done advancing for different artists. He's done artist management before.
On a small level, I have.
Yeah, in concert booking and planning and stuff like
promoter,
that.
Promoter, so. I've been, and I'm a musician and a broadcaster. So it's been helpful to see all sides. And you too, being right with me, you've seen all sides, more than you wanted to see maybe. But it's important in how to treat a person right, even in just a limited, small amount of time that you have them for. You want to be able to stand out in a positive way. Mm. And Dara, you had a grandiose idea.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, man, I want to do a 3-camera shoot. I want to do it and apart from our own studio in a different location, you know, for mobility for them, but also for access to more gear. For us.
Yeah.
And we had never done exactly like this before, but we had a plan, we had prep time, and we had a little bit of time on the back end in case anything went weird. But our goal was, don't mess up.
Yeah.
Because this is high stakes for you. This is, you know, but there's been other high stakes situations. I don't want to make this as, you know.
Yeah, Greg's definitely walked on that side of things much more than I have. Like bringing Dr. Lonnie Smith in to Nashville multiple times. You've brought Charlie in, right? Charlie Hunter. He's brought shows in, and that probably is something in similar territory of like, hey, there is a physical person in your presence. They need to be taken care of. They need accommodations. We were not responsible for our accommodations, but you know, you're going to be responsible for them being comfortable where they are.
Absolutely.
For them physically getting from one place to another.
Right.
I don't do logistics like that. That's not my world.
Mm-hmm.
So Greg had responsibility for a lot of that type of thing, mm-hmm. just the advancing, the communications part of it, versus me who worked on the technical side. It's like, you know, communicate with the studios. There were several places we were considering having it. Went and looked at multiple places. A couple of them were pretty cool. We were really considering more like studio spaces.
Right.
And then we finally landed at a place called Rec Philly, which is a really, really cool spot. It's
shout
like
out
an
to
artist.
to the Rec Philly and your contact there, Scarlett.
Scarlett.
Thank you, Scarlett.
It's a really cool artist space. It's like a co-working space, kind of like WeWork, but it's specifically for artists. So they've got studio spaces, podcasting spaces, places where you can do painting, shoot music videos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it is a membership-based thing. We're not members yet because they hadn't opened up membership. So they really super worked with us.
Absolutely.
Just out of respect for Layla and who she is.
Yep.
And made sure that we had a place that was comfortable for all of us to conduct this interview. So they had full on just the equipment, all the camera stuff that you see there that we worked with was Rec Philly.
Absolutely.
So we're looking forward to joining them really soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was on a scale that I had never really done things on before. I have the technical knowledge to do it, but I just work with one camera because I'm literally just shooting myself.
Yeah.
So one camera and one mic is generally what we have. We have multiple mics. So we brought a ton of equipment, and I may throw up a picture here on the YouTube to show you kind of our little Mack wagon that was completely full.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we left, I mean, we brought audio equipment. Greg is great with audio recording. I know the basic stuff, but Greg jumped in there and just, you know,
had
the audio sounding incredible. It sounded like it was mixed.
Well, I'm grateful to you again for the prep time, being able to, you know, get ready the day before.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could say that to anybody, it's like, you want to start a podcast, you want to interview people. The main thing to do is to make sure your equipment is working and that you have it not only turned on, but efficiently working so that there's no bugs. You don't want
coming
your
in and you're
exactly
like, oh, wait, we're just getting
fumbling and
on
trying
just
to figure
minute,
that out
amongst yourselves.
All you should have to do is turn it on, get everyone seated where you want them to be. If it's video, you know, white balance or focus and begin your chat.
Yeah.
And that's what Dara did.
Yeah.
I thought the interview went very well. And I appreciate, again, you being enough in the moment to when she would say something, you know, that, you know, wasn't on your list. You're like, hey, man, let's just go there.
Yeah.
Let's just go where she wanted to talk.
Yeah, it's actually a pet peeve when I listen to interviews or watch interviews and the person's sitting there with a stack of cards or whatever, and they had their pre-prepared questions and they are not interacting. They're not responding to that person in real time. It's literally just like, I got to get through these questions, which I just, you know, I kind of at the end, it was like, I didn't want to do that, even though, you know, we did have to run the questions by them so that she generally understood what was coming. But it was like, in the moment, I feel like I understood the general territory that they wanted to keep it in. I really wanted to talk to her about her dad, which we did, mm-hmm. but she definitely wanted to stay away from anything that was speculating about stuff that she didn't know about, things
yeah.
that were happening before she was even born,
right?
Stuff like that. And so I felt, you know, just having a general understanding of like, hey, okay, stay within these parameters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it went pretty well for me yeah. not to have been looking at the questions.
You don't need to do that. Like, I mean, you don't need to do
let's
that.
Let's just talk. Let's just have a conversation.
Dara prepares her breakdowns very meticulously. She writes her own scripts, but there are scripts. But Dara often gives hot takes. That's the wrong word. But spontaneous commentaries on her thoughts and opinions on certain events. And anyone listening to this podcast knows you know how to talk. So I wasn't worried about the interview. I was worried about the technical side.
Yeah. Well, to be truthful, I was worried about the technical stuff. You were worried about logistics.
Yeah.
That was kind of how that split
Fair
off.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's certain things, honestly, at the end of the day that you have to trust, but you want to make it so that your trust is minimal. You've proven what's going to happen to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of trust is minimal, so your worry is minimal.
Yeah.
And I don't know who we're talking to today who may want to do a podcast like this or want to do an interview series or is, you know, trying to get that extra courage to go prep time, really. And it sounds really corny, but that's really, I believe, where we were able to execute. And this series has been really awesome. You know, three women and three fathers, equally talented among them. And just seeing how these great men's legacies have been truly enhanced by the talent and the vision of their daughters. Right on for you. I don't know how you even had the idea to do this, but I think it's a great theme and something I've been enjoying listening, even being as close to you as I am.
Yeah, I don't know if it was even really an idea. It was just like, all right, just randomly had the idea to reach out to these three women. And then I realized like, oh, wait a minute, there's a theme here.
Mm-hmm.
This is daughters and fathers. And so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's been a really cool process. Even sitting down with Janice McCullough, who's just a beautiful person. I hope we both get to spend some time with her
mm-hmm.
in person, but just, you Holly know, Robinson, listening
Pete,
to, yeah, listening to
great.
Her reflections about her dad,
mm-hmm.
You know, one-on-one, that it's just nothing like it to listen to someone talk about, you know, their father. That's a point of view that you're not going to get from anyone else. And then sitting down, yeah, with Holly Robinson Pete, that one's been a long time in the making.
Mm-hmm.
We've been back and forth, and then we had it scheduled, and then she got sick, and then she had her gala, and then
mm-hmm.
I just kind of wanted to give it some time and let her settle down from that, and then, you know, revisited it. Hey, Holly, are you ready to come back and do the interview? And she's, oh, yeah. You know, she was really excited to do it, so.
But in each case, each woman took the time that she had.
Yeah.
For you and with you. And again, I say, to be a broken record, thank you for your work, making a space to be able to not only meet these great people, but to be in the same space as them to birth something additionally great.
Hmm.
You know, I see it as a collaborative in all three cases.
Hmm.
And I know that this is the seed for more of this kind of conversation.
Yeah, I definitely am interested in having more, as you said, conversations
mm-hmm.
with people that I find of interest. You know, I was mm-hmm. raised in the Oprah generation. I grew up on Oprah and, you know, watching all sorts of people. I mean, watching interviews, I think that's one of both of our favorite things to do.
Yeah.
You know, Greg has done a ton of interviews with mostly jazz luminaries, improvisational heroes, legends, pretty much anyone you can think of in the jazz world, Greg has talked to at some point. But I've never really seen myself as an interviewer. Just sit down and tell me about yourself. And that's just, I don't know if it just hasn't really felt like my space to occupy. But having conversations like this with, you know, vibrant people who are plugged in with what I do, who know who I am. And so it does feel like more of an exchange versus just like, hello, Miss Layla Hathaway, mm-hmm. would you deign to speak to such a lowly creature mm-hmm. as I? You know, if it feels that way, that does not feel like as interesting a space to me.
Mm.
Although, you know, if somebody like freaking Stevie Wonder or James Taylor wanted to sit down and I had to just sit at their feet and kneel and be in awe, or Dick Van Dyke or somebody
mm-hmm.
like Mel Brooks,
mm-hmm.
I would be happy to do that.
Yeah.
But this feels like a much more interesting territory to me, which is why I felt like I should reach out to them specifically. Because it's like, okay, you know, they do follow me. They know who I am. There's some basis for having a conversation, a real conversation.
Right.
And that's what the Layla thing felt like. That's what all three of them felt like, really, even though it was my job to get information from them. So, yeah, I would definitely be more open to more of this kind of thing in the future, as long as it felt like a comfortable space, a safe space, like a collaborative or creative space. I'd be happy to. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
In the distance, y'all. We told you, it's raw.
It's outside.
It's raw today.
Outside today. But if you had to give any kind of pointer, you know, to anybody, I've already said mine, you know, pre-planning. But if you had to give any guide or pointer to someone who's really trying to, you know, make their podcast happen, they want to do a conversation series. You know, they're listeners to this show and they get inspired by it. They've heard you give some encouraging words before, but being on the backside, what would you impart wisdom-wise to someone who wants to be productive?
As far as just doing an interview-style podcast, I mean, I'm very new at it. I don't really know a lot about it. You know, I'm not the big advice person. I'm just going to tell you what my experience has been, and this is the wisdom I've gleaned. And so, yeah, I'm still very new at this, just from the very few interviews that I have done. It helps to have some basis for communication so that, you know, that's not something everyone can develop. That's not, you know, just like, make sure Layla Hathaway follows you. I mean, I don't know how useful that really is. Would I have thought to reach out to her? But I mean, you know, you have done this stuff. You have been the one to reach out to people. Of course, you've always been connected with like radio stations or at the very least a podcast or something like that. So yeah, I would say, you know, before you start going for those big fish, make sure that you cut your teeth on a few folks where the stakes aren't as high. You know, don't let the first person that you go after be, you know, Brad Pitt or something, which is a hilarious thought. But like, you know, even in terms of like keeping up your morale, like make sure that if you have an area of interest, focus on that, because educators always want to talk, you know, fellow creators always want to talk. There are several creators that I have either had on or I'm going to have on. People who are in your area of specialty are usually happy to have conversations about whatever that area of interest is. So I would, if I had any kind of recommendation, it would probably be that. Like, make sure that your podcast is actually focused on something, you know, kind of specific versus just like, I want to get out and do an interview podcast. Well, that's not easy if you don't have a name. It's not easy for me. There would be tons of people I could not get on this podcast because they don't know who the bleepity bleep I am. So, you know, if you're interested in sewing, do a sewing podcast. If you're interested in skateboarding or basketball, or if you're interested in math and science, do a podcast that's focused on the thing that you're interested in and connect with people who are like-minded and just have interesting conversations with people who are about what you're about.
Right on, right on. Well, I'm happy to be a part of this proximately, but this is I'm All Over the Place. Tell them where they can find you again.
Yeah, Dara Star Tucker everywhere. Dara with one R, Star with two. And then on Instagram, I'm Dara Tucker B. And yeah, I would love to connect with you. I'm just so glad you guys stuck around and listened. And you guys are coming on along on this journey with us. We also have a Patreon. I have a Patreon at Dara Star Tucker if you would like to find a way to support me and support the work that I do. But it's pretty cool. If you've been here since the beginning, thank you so much. Remember to leave the podcast a review. Go rate the podcast in whatever podcasting app you're listening in and give it a review. We don't talk about that enough, and we should.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you all next time. Thank you.